when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher. Welcome to episode 21. Our topic today is homesteading and prepping, similarities and differences. So I'm joined here today, before I go too far, by my co-host and partner in life, Glenn Tate. How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing great. Hello, Shelby.
So we always like to start off and kind of just who we are and what we do. This is our wonderful show that we are on. So many different ways to find out about us, so many ways to listen to us. The best place to kind of start is prepping2-0.com. That's where you can you can listen to past episodes and find your favorite way to listen to us. If you want to connect with Glenn or myself, we are authors. We have book series that we've done. Glenn's is way bigger than mine.
A lot of pluralization. That's multiple pluralization. I question you as an author if you have seven S's at the end of a word.
Well, it's creativity.
Oh, right.
I make stuff up. Okay. So you can reach Glenn if you want to.
Wow.
At 299days.com. And I encourage you to sign up for his email newsletter there. You can reach me at agreatstate.com. By the way, I'm just going to say this. Book 3, the final in this series.
Crushing it.
It's done. It's in the final stages. Everyone asks me, what's going to happen? It's almost there. So there you go. So there's how to reach us. We are also on a couple of really great radio stations, KYAH out of Utah, Utah's Talk Authority. Welcome to our Utah listeners. Also, the Salem, Oregon area on KYKN. Love having you folks join us as well. So our next part that we always like to talk about is, you can see this on our website, the list of the top 100 things that will no longer be available in a collapse. And some of those things are kind of no duh. Yeah, I can see why that wouldn't be there. And then some of them are kind of strange. And we're on number 11 this week, vegetable oil.
Oh, my goodness. Why would vegetable oil be important?
Pick me. I know the answer. Vegetable oil, well, first of all, it's a fairly processed product. It's not something you can just grow out of your garden. You do have to purchase it unless you know how to make your own. And I'm sure somebody out there is going to send me an email saying they know how to make their own. Good. The problem with vegetable oil, this is the problem, is it doesn't preserve very well at all. And there's some out there that are better than others, but as a general rule, it goes rancid after a while, vegetable in particular. So the typical replacement to that, and our guest today will be able to give us more information on this, is animal fats. So when you think of vegetable oil, you're thinking, you know, what are you going to make your baked goods with, or what are you going to use for lubricants or whatever?
Frying food.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have all the food in the world. You can have great cookware. You can have an awesome heat source. And if you cook something once and it sticks to the pan, and then it's going to stay. I mean, you got a problem. And so it's that kind of forgotten part of the food element of your preps is, and not everything needs to be fried, but, you know, quite a bit of stuff needs to be fried. And quite a few things you eat now in peacetime are fried and you sort of don't know it because you're not doing the frying because it's processed. Eggs, classic example. You know, but anyway, so there's vegetable oil and animal fat has got a really terrible rap. And in the collapse, it's going to be, number one, much more common and easy to get. And number two, you're going to need the calories. And you're probably going to need the salt if you're using bacon fat and all of that other stuff. But anyway, please.
Well, the second part of that is baking. You need oil to make a baked item. So think about if you're prepping mixed. Oh, look, I found all these great mixes, these, you know, bread mix or this whatever mix. And I'm going to prep it away. Well, you're going to need oil for that. Generally speaking. So think about that. And I'm kind of curious. I'm sitting here because I know our guest is kind of hanging on hold right now. He's a solid homesteader. I want to find out what he thinks about oil. So that brings us to the next part. I'm going to let you introduce our guest, Mr. Tate.
Thank you very much. Well, we have a friend of ours and a Patreon. How awesome is that? Thank you, sir. Named Derek. We're not going to use a last name here. And Derek is a homesteader and has some really great thoughts about, as we said, the topic, which is homesteading and prepping, similarities and differences. You'll notice the topic, and we spoke to him about this, isn't homesteading versus prepping, right? That's like clickbait, like AR versus AK. No, no, we're not saying they're in conflict with each other. We're talking about similarities and differences. So, Derek, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, guys, thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here, and I get to talk to two of my favorite authors and probably the most dynamic prepping couple there is in the country. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, that's pretty cool. We it comes naturally. You heard us talking before we came on the air, and this is just how we are. I mean, we're enthusiastic, you know, about life and this topic. Well, tell us some of your background.
Well, I come from a varied background. I've been a contractor all my life, not a cool PMC, not a private military contractor, no, a building contractor. And I'm also a mechanical engineer. So that's kind of my background. And I've been a very earthy, hands-on kind of guy my entire life. And my wife has been a clinical herbalist for, I don't know, 29, 30 years, something like that. But, you know, we got into homesteading about 24 years ago, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't really understand what homesteading is. So it bears some clarification.
Yes,
you know, homesteading is it's a very self-reliant lifestyle. We Americans tend to not produce anything anymore. Think about our grandparents or our great grandparents. Go back to the Depression era. Most people lived in rural America back then. About 80% of the population did. And people produced things such as fruits, vegetables, chicken, eggs, whatever it might be. So nowadays, most of us rely on that just-in-time delivery system that is destined to fail. When we know that grocery stores only have a couple days worth of food items in stock and there is no warehouse in the back, that when it's gone, it's gone. So for us living a more homesteading lifestyle, our grocery store is our property. It's what we raise. It's what we grow. And I tell you what, that is an incredible peace of mind to have, knowing that when things do change, when things crumble, and they're going to, we are going to be able to sustain ourselves for a tremendous amount of time.
I love it. And you just covered the questions of what is homesteading and why do it. And I'd like to add something to this. And this is my, I'm going to say, formerly bad attitude about homesteading, right? And here's what I mean by that.
Perfect.
Yeah, taking people back to the good old days of prepping 1.0. So it's 2008, 2009. We're all freaking out because a socialist has been elected. Of course, people like us were the only ones who realized he was a socialist before everybody else did. Anyway, so it was a time of crisis and fear. I think that's fair to say. So it's 2009, and just like I describe in 299 days, I get this cabin. A miraculous set of facts line up, and I get this cabin, and I've now got a place to prep. I've got a place to go. Extremely excited about this. You've got a big threat, and then you've got a big solution coming at roughly the same time. So this is a time of great energy and passion. And so at the time, I was a moderator of the Survival Podcast forum, which is a great forum. I encourage people to look at it. And I get on there, and I say, wow, this is so cool. I just got this cabin, and this is really cool. And a lot of people were very supportive. The guy who runs Survival Podcast, Jack Spierko, was not as supportive, and he was nice about it. He said, hey, this is cool, but let me ask you some questions. And he asked me a variety of questions about, well, what kind of permaculture is there? What kind of water source is there? And all these very valid questions about, basically, how does this cabin fit into being a homestead? And I said, listen, I don't have a homestead, okay? I have a bug out location very defensible. It's got a lot of qualities like, I don't know, access to the Pacific Ocean via an inlet. I mean, you walk down the steps and there's the salt water, and that's a plus too. I have oysters and clams just for the just you walk down the stairs. Shelby's nodding because she's done this. You walk down the stairs and you start picking up amazing seafood. And so I've got some stuff going for me. And I could tell that his mindset was, well, everything needs to be a homestead. You need to grow all your food. You need to do all these things. And it has to be sort of completely self-sufficient. And I said, rather vocally, no, I don't have all those features. I don't know what I could do other than rob a bank and have a bunch of money and go get, you know, a million acres in Idaho and do all this other stuff. And that, again, is what we're always talking about on this show, the practicality. Prepping needs to be practical. And having a homestead right off the bat, absolutely, which we'll talk about in a moment because you've got some good thoughts on this, just waving a wand and having everything working and growing your own food is kind of hard to go from 0 to 60. However, it's a fantastic goal. So one of the things we're going to talk about today, and one of the reasons we have you on, is because you agree with us. No, I'm just kidding. But no, you realize, I should say, is a better way of saying it, that we're not talking about, hey, everybody listening, let's say you live in the suburbs, you know, just go ahead and get 1 million acres in Idaho and everything will be cool. We're not setting the bar ridiculously high. So I wanted to make that point because it fits in with the practicality we're always talking about.
So I love
absolutely.
So tell us, and I absolutely agree with Glenn, because I think that's for those of us who are not, Glenn and I, we are aspiring and we are working towards homesteading. We are not there. We are not where we produce 100% of all of our own food and all that. But so two things, Derek, what I would like, if you can answer for me, what do you see as the difference between homesteading versus prepping? And we're only going to, I think it's a progression, but I'm going to let you say, I don't like that there's a versus there because they're not competing. I think it's one leads to the other. And also just dispel the rumor there. You cannot, for those people out there who are in this movement and want to do this, what I don't want to be is that Jack Spierko who kind of discourages somebody, even though I think his intentions were like, no, he was challenging you to try to think this through, whatever. For those of us out there, like, I am not there. It will be 15 years before I'm even close to this because it is, you can't just become instant homesteader overnight. So love it if you could add your ideas to that. So homesteading versus prepping, and how instantly can you do it?
You can't do it instantly. And you know, I know of Jack and I respect him, but I'm going to disagree with some of his comments in that regard. So let's get real. And I think, not I think, I know, we're very much common sense homesteaders. You can't do everything, but there's a way around all that. It takes time. You know, we've been homesteading for over 24 years and we add skills 2.0, right? We add skills every year to our repertoire. And every year we get more self-sustainable, but it's got to be done with balance. And, you know, I can grow carrots all day long, but I can go buy carrots for a buck a bag. It doesn't make sense for me to grow carrots here. You know, I'm swimming upstream to do that. So, again, it's common sense. Now, you don't need 1 million acres. And we do it on a fairly smallish piece of property, about 2.5 acres. And one of those acres is planted with the herbal kind of stuff for my wife's business. So we're homesteading on a relatively small piece of property, yet we produce 95% of our meat, all of our eggs. We produce about 40% of our produce. We could actually produce far more than that, but again, it's that common sense thing. What makes sense? So going back to your question of homesteading and prepping, you know, preppers aren't homesteaders unless they kind of make that leap. However, homesteaders, even if they don't identify themselves as being a prepper, Most homesteaders are preppers because they are preserving food. They're raising animals. It's a very complementary thing to your preps. And it's definitely a 2.0 or a 3.0 evolution from the prepping stage to a more homesteading stage. And again, it can be done. You can live in suburbia and get this done. And it's work. You know, it's definitely a lot of work. If you have animals, they require feeding twice a day and some care checks. Or if you have gardens, it requires watering and attention. And but it's a beautiful thing to do. You know, and I think too, like Glenn, what you were saying is that having the ocean right at your doorstep, which is fabulous, you know, what a tremendous resource. I think if you're going to look at being more self-reliant, we have to look at what our geographical area provides us. You know, we have some things going for us. Certain produce items grow fantastically here. Other things don't. You have the ocean. What a tremendous resource. So, you know, you have to just adapt based on your region.
Well, and people are dying to find this out. What state do you live in? We're not trying to have you identify where you live specifically. So people can say, oh, that's kind of like my situation. What state do you live in?
We live in California. And we're behind enemy lines here. We live in a very rural community. It's a very conservative community. It's a very homestead prepping minded community. I know on the internet we get blasted, we California, because there's so much wackiness, and there is. But you know, I know people paint a broad brush that we wish California would just drop off the ends of the earth. It'd be like saying we don't want Glenn and Shelby anymore because they live in Washington, which is crazy. It's pockets. Come on. But we live in a cooler climate. We just had our own snowpocalypse recently. So we truly get four seasons. It gets plenty hot in the summer and chilly in the wintertime. So a very varied climate here. We're in the Sierra Nevada foothills.
Okay. And I would think that's, in my mind, sort of above average as far as a good place to homestead. So I want to, you know, let people know, yeah, we're not talking about Alaska or some, you know, volcanic ash in Hawaii or something. You're in a above average place to do this, but not the absolute best place in the entire country.
And let me just jump in here. Let me just jump in here really
absolutely.
Quick.
Absolutely.
Because we are homesteaders here, and we were saying this, I'm just going to say this for our listeners out there. Derek lives in a remote location, and so his sound quality is going to be a little tricky. And Glenn and I get this because you've heard a couple of our shows where we've had to like try to, you know, make sure all the wires are connected and all that. So that's unfortunately or fortunately one of the downsides to that. So just so our listeners know, that's why you're going to hear some hums and things from Derek's end, but it's still good information. So other thing I wanted to say, I so love what you just said, Derek, in terms of know your environment. And so when you hear the word California, think what we all think of California. We think of the great, I mean, California was boomed not on the gold rush from 200 years ago, but on the fruit and the farming and the agricultural industry. So if you think about what kind of farmer's market he can go into his local community and find, nice, good on ya.
Well, Derek, you mentioned
absolutely.
You mentioned this is possible in the suburbs. Could you give folks, because most people listening live in either an urban setting or probably far more likely in a suburban setting. And again, we don't want this to be the whole get a million acres in Idaho thing. And you're doing a magnificent job of letting people know they don't need that. So what are some tips for homesteading for people who live in urban or suburban areas?
You know, absolutely. I think it's about a decision-making process of what do you want to do to be a little bit more self-sufficient. In suburbia, there's many, many people that raise lane chickens, for instance. In some areas, they can't have roosters because they do make some noise. Raising chickens is really easy to do. And so you're raising them as a beginner. You're raising them for eggs, for instance. They take very little space, very minimal care. They're pretty self-sufficient. And so all of a sudden, you've got this wonderful breakfast meal anytime you want. Eggs are fantastic. It's a superfood. And you can also use the byproduct, chicken manure, once it's composted, you can use that in some vegetable gardens. Now, if you have a suburban backyard, you can either put in some raised beds or use potted plants and start growing a few things that you like. Tomatoes, for instance. Get your feet wet and try some growing of different produce, strawberries, you know, something like that. It doesn't have to be a grand scale, but you're working towards something. And again, you're gaining skills year after year until your skills continue to grow. Now, you may end up producing enough, like we do. You may produce enough to where you decide, you know, I've got this abundance, let's say strawberries. I've got this abundance of strawberries. I really like strawberry jam. How do I do that? Okay, it's a skill. Water bath canning. It's very simple. Anybody can do it. So again, then you're building your skills. Now, you can expand your gardens as you continue to grow. But, you know, keep in mind, guys, it's got to make sense. Growing is a skill. I think one of the common prepping myths is I have a seed can of heritage seeds, and if things go sideways, I'm going to plant this massive garden. I've never grown anything in my life. And guess what? You're not going to have much success. It is a skill. So keep that in mind. But you can continue to scale things up. Do grow things that make sense, things that you want to learn how to do. And if you have kids, I encourage you, get them involved too. Give them a little spot in the garden. And boy, that's going to plant seeds. I'll tell you a really quick story. The reason I got into homesteading was a third grade teacher set us up with a school garden plot, and we all grew little things, and I grew radishes. Oh my gosh. That was the most amazing thing in my life. It stuck in my bin until about 24 years ago when we said, let's knuckle down and start doing some homesteading. So you're planting seeds with those kids like you're planting seeds for a garden.
I love it. And you know, another thing, if you're in a suburban setting and you're dreaming about a homestead or something like that, or a bug out location, you can start, as you said, learning these skills now, by the way, and having awesome strawberry jam, which is good, and getting, you mentioned, the kids fired up about gardening. Here's another thing from my past with Dr. Foxy. I can see this as a reason to garden, and that is an internal political matter, and that is test out your spouse if you're wondering if he or she's 100% on board, and you can find out, because if the idea of growing strawberries and making great jam is shocking hillbilly behavior, then maybe that's an indicator of some other stuff. We have about 30 seconds before we're going to need to go to a break. Anything you want to add in the next couple seconds to amplify what we just talked about?
Absolutely. I have a retired military guy that lives in suburbia. He tore out his front yard lawn and put in raised beds, much to the chagrin of the neighbors. But that's what he wanted to do. I mean, good for him. That's putting it into practice.
Awesome. There you go. There's an example. Well, we're going to go to the second segment now. Stick with us.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us. Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher coming at you on episode 21 with our special guest, Derek. We're talking about the differences in between homesteading and prepping, the similarities more than anything. But Derek just gave us a really great kind of teaser before our break on... You told us about this man, and I've met people like this when I lived in the city, people who would rip out their whole front yard, loved it, and they would put in raised beds, and they would literally use every square inch of their whatever dirt they had, and they would plant stuff. And I remember, you know, in my development as a prepper, I remember thinking, oh, there goes the neighborhood, right? I've had thoughts like that. Now I'm like, that's spot on. How'd you do that? You know what I mean? So my question to you is, for those urban, city living, prepping types, here's my concern for those folks. And I'm really curious as to your answer. I want our listeners to hear your answer. You are advertising to the neighborhood that you have resources and you have a garden that can produce food. And when a collapse happens, that's going to be, in my mind, that's going to just get raked over. The neighbors are going to come and pilfer food or destroy the garden and know that you have resources. If you have them on the outside of the house, you're going to have them on the inside of your house. What can that person do security-wise in that situation? Love to hear your answer on that.
Well, it's a great question. And actually, it even to rural America here where we are too. But in that urban or suburban setting, if you are advertising, if you have that garden out front in your front yard, you're not only asking for trouble, you're going to get trouble. And you'll be lucky if they just take your garden stuff. So operational security, you're going to need to be discreet about what you're doing if you're in a suburban or urban area, and I would move that garden to the backyard. I would not advertise to your neighbors. It's easy to grow too much summer squash and then you start giving things away. Maybe don't do that. You know, maybe find other food preservation methods to keep that within your own home. But, you know, honestly, in an urban, especially an urban environment, likely a suburban environment, when we go through a partial or total societal collapse, think Venezuela or Bosnia, you're in a rotten place to be. And I'm sorry to say that, but you're in a dangerous spot. And, you know, then you have to look at, is your neighborhood defensible? But you're gonna lose things if you have advertised and if you have things out front where it's visible. And I don't see how that could turn out very well.
And I have a theory about normalcy bias and people bugging out, and it relates directly to what you just said. A lot of people, even preppers, even prepping 2.0ers listening to this, there are probably things in their life that they're clinging to that they say to themselves, boy, if I had to bug out, I just couldn't leave whatever it is behind. And that's a normalcy bias. And if you are in an urban or suburban setting and you have those prize tomato plants that are just awesome and you won an award for them because they're so awesome and you need to leave, go ahead and leave. Don't let the heirloom tomatoes become a thing that slows you down. And this is, I'm speaking to myself now because I have a couple things that I would find hard to leave. And I've had to tell myself over and over again, nope, you might have to pick up and leave with it. So what are some tips we talked about?
You know, and there's...
Oh, please. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, there is nothing more important than your family's life or your life. And that normalcy bias will kill you. There's no doubt about it. So leave. If you have to leave, do it. Leave. Leave early.
Exactly. Speaking of some characters in some books, yeah, leave before everyone else does. So you hinted on it just now with what you said. So if you live in a rural community, you have your own security situations that you have to think about. And we're finding that out where we live now. What tips that you would give a tips that you would give a rural person in regards to security, in regards to just homesteading and prepping? Think about that person who's getting ready to maybe make a move or find a bug out location in a rural setting, that, and they may be unfamiliar with it. Because I think that's a lot of people these days. A lot of us have lived in city environments. I get a lot of feedback from readers and fans who say, yeah, and they have a 5-year plan, they have a 2-year plan to move. So give us some tips. If you had that person in front of you, Derek, what would you say to them?
Okay, great question. Living in the country, and we've lived in the country for just forever, and it's a wonderful place to be. It does bring its own set of unique challenges. It's not the inner city challenge, or it's not the suburban challenge, but there are challenges. I'll give you one example. Our recently elected sheriff, when he was giving town hall meetings, he was talking to us folks that are living in the South County, in more remote areas. We call it jokingly Redneckistan. But he was saying, hey, you guys, on a bad night, we could be on a call on the other side of the county. And if you've got an intruder with a weapon, we could be 45 minutes away. Think about that. You need to take care of yourselves. And again, you do. You need to be more self-reliant. You know, in our area, we have all areas have that certain element, the dirt bags of the world, if you will. And we have security measures here on our property. The security measures are pretty deep. I'm not going to get real heavily vested into that. Attention. But if somebody's on my property, I know it. I know it before they can get very far onto my property. And that's a choice because I'm also a prepper, you know, a 2.0 prepper. I want to have security. I want to protect what we have. And really, you know, this kind of ties into my prepping and homesteading, especially the homesteading side, the principles, the three P's. And what I call it is we produce. We produce our food here, and then we go to the second P, preserve. We preserve the food, canning, drying, dehydrating. We just bought a freeze dryer, you know, all these different sorts of things. And then you have to protect everything that you've produced. And, of course, you're protecting your family. So the three P's also apply to prepping. You have to be to protect yourself and your loved ones.
Well, you bring up a good point in the after show, and we're going to have you on and get your thoughts on the after show and the after shows for Patreon supporters. There was a great video put out by Viking Preparedness, and we're going to talk about it. Got some great comments on the Patreon message board, and it's the idea of the starving hordes from the city versus local threats, you know, the Bubbas, the guys in a pickup truck who aren't prepared. We're going to have this great discussion because there's two schools of thought. One is, oh, yeah, starving hordes, you don't need to worry about them because you need to worry only about your local problems. And the other school of thought is, oh, no, it's going to be the starving hordes from the cities and everybody around me is nice. I'm obviously exaggerating to make points, but we'll talk about that in the after show. Well, a question for you is,
you bet,
common newbie homesteading errors, and you know, tell us about that and the learning process. And I think, see, because a lot of people listening to this right now, including Shelby and I, we live in a rural area and consider ourselves preppers, obviously, and we're taking some baby steps into the homesteading world, and we're doing it slowly and I think methodically and rationally and cash flow wise, you know, practically. So, And so we've made a couple little homesteading errors, and I'm curious, what are some ones you see? Because I want people listening to this to not, you know, Jussie Smollett beat themselves up too much if they make a couple little errors.
And also, I want to make sure that I don't make any more new ones. Let's just be honest, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there are so many people that decide to get into homesteading. They've spent too much time on Pinterest, and they see this glossy version of what they think homesteading is. And, you know, homesteading can be heartbreaking. It's blood, sweat, and tears sometimes. It's also joy and just wonderful stuff. But oftentimes, newer homesteaders set themselves up to fail. And one of the main, well, there's a couple of biggies. One, we're going to talk about relationships a little bit because, you know, again, I think you guys are an awesome couple. I understand your story. My story with my beautiful wife is very similar. And we are a team, and we communicate on a regular basis, not only with goal setting. What are we going to do with the homestead this year? What are we going to scale back on or ramp up on? What are we going to acquire in new skills? Because if you don't have that communication, Glenn, you were talking about growing strawberries and making jam sounds like the devil's work. You know, you've got some serious problems there. So you do need a united front, a team with your spouse, your partner. And that's going to be number one. But then you get into this cascading problem of, oh, let's add sheep, goats, cattle, rabbits, and chickens this year. You did way too much. You're going to throw yourselves into an absolute disaster, not only for the animals, but for yourself. You're going to be stressed out because you're trying to learn too many different things. And you do make mistakes. And let's face it, I wish I could, through osmosis, give you guys all the experiences, all the knowledge that I've gained, but it's all been hard-fought knowledge. You know, I have made mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes. But definitely don't overdo it. Start with some small goals, maybe two or three skills a year. There's some easier ones where you can maybe do five or six. Learning how to cook from scratch is a skill that's kind of rare in America today because everybody's buying these prepackaged processed foods. But, you know, start small, set goals, and then constantly reevaluate. Something's not working. Why? Who can I talk to get a better handle on why this isn't working? It's something I do with our homestead here. I teach a lot of classes here helping newer homesteaders gain skills, and boy, for a ridiculously small amount of money, they gain so much knowledge, it saves them hundreds, if not thousands of dollars in mistakes. So seek out people that are in your community. If you're moving to a homesteading area, or even if you're in a suburban environment, there are people out there that can guide you, commonly for free or for a small fee. That'll prevent so many terrible mistakes.
You know, and I love the point you just made about start off slow and everything, because it fits right in with layering. We're always talking about layering.
Yes,
yes, have some MREs. And yes, try to go grow chickens. And there's everything in between, because while you're learning the strawberries and maybe you've got some strawberry jam, you're not relying entirely on strawberry jam to make it through the winter because you've layered. You've got MREs, you've got beans, you've got rice, you've got canned food, you've got all these other things. Maybe you learn how to fish. That's a great thing too. You've got all these other layers to it. So you're not homesteading and now, you know, saying putting all your eggs in one basket. So the proper thoughtful pace of learning how to homestead is yet another reason to layer. And by the way, the layering idea doesn't just apply to food. It applies to everything, you know, to security and everything else. So layering.
It does.
Yeah.
Layering is so important. And being prepper-minded here, obviously we have layers upon layers upon layers. And it's not just food. Okay, well, we lose power here regularly. And we can be out 3 to 5 days. Well, if we didn't have a wood stove, we would be very cold. But then I have a backup. If something happened to the wood stove, I have a portable propane heater. I can cook many different ways. You know, it's those layers that are going to give you that self-sufficiency that you want, that preparedness that you want, and it definitely follows suit with homesteading.
Awesome. So this is, I love it because I had a little brain freeze there that does not make for good radio, but I'm sitting here thinking about our most recent conversations that we've had when we've had a couple of power outages this winter, where it's like, okay, so wood stove, we've had the conversation about wood stoves. We don't have one, but it's like, no, we've talked about that. And that's to kind of fit in with our, okay, in the next year or two, let's make sure that gets covered. So, so thank you, Derek. You're just affirming what we've already talked about quite a bit. So, common newbie, you said one of them was taking on too much. So, do you, this, and we kind of talked about this at the beginning, and I love this topic right here. I don't think prepping, and this is me, and feel free to disagree because I'm a big girl and I can handle that, but I don't think prepping and homesteading, I think you would agree with me, are mutually exclusive. I think one leads to another, one points to the other depending on your circumstance. But prepping means, to me, being ready and being able to be prepped for a collapse of some kind, whatever it may be. Homesteading is that sustainable lifestyle that makes it so that you can live off your land, kind of a thing, where, like what you just said, you consume 95% of your, you produce and consume 95% of your food. Prepping, this is how I came to the idea of homesteading, and you tell me what you think about this and this whole conversation. As I sit here and prep, I think about, okay, if I have to sustain life in my household for, let's say, more than 6 months, there's not enough space on my property to store that much food and, food, power, electricity, power banks, to store enough for the members of our household for that long. I need to find a way to be sustainable after an X number of time. That means I need to be gardening. I need I need to have the chickens and the rabbits and all that. And you see that conversation, if you've read my books, book one, that's Julie's mindset. That's my mindset. And that's why I wrote it that way. Talk to me about that. And I know that's a huge question, kind of a huge concept, but I think one lends itself to the other. Ready, set, Derek, go.
Yeah, prepping and homesteading dovetail together just perfectly. And because this is the 2.0 show, it is about getting those extra skills. And as you progress from being a prepper and that mindset of, you know, how do I sustain myself after that 6 month period of time or a year's period of time? What can I do? So the homesteading really dovetails in nicely. You mentioned that homesteading is a lifestyle, and it absolutely it is. We could, if I wasn't on the internet, if I wasn't aware of things, we could literally lock the gates and be just fine for a long time. As I mentioned before, 40% of our produce comes from here, 95% of our meat source. But, you know, I can, that 40% of produce is by choice. I like bananas. I like avocados and mushrooms. We don't grow them here, but they're wants, not needs. So we can be more self-sustaining just by saying, you know, we don't need the bananas. We can just continue forward. So, you know, that homesteading is like that layering where it gives you that extra buffer. Think of it, I can look out the window right now and I can look at my chicken area. We have a bunch of laying chickens. We have the pigs that actually just got butchered yesterday. But I look at that and I see a grocery store. And I look at the vegetable garden. I see our grocery store. And that's a pretty cool thing to have. And then when you have excess, which we do, then we can preserve, we can freeze dry, we can do all sorts of different techniques that we have so much ability to sustain ourselves for a very long time. And let's face it, having skills, let's say if we had to leave for some reason, you know, God forbid, but if my wife and I had to leave and bug out for some reason, we might lose everything here, but what we bring are skills after skills after skills. And we would be welcomed into other prepping, homesteading scenarios if we had to leave. And that's peace of mind too.
You know, and that's so true. And that the skills you could take, and this is straight out of A Great State in Shelby's books, you know, people with skills and being able to augment a place because of the skills you have, skills that you're only going to get through trial and error. But here's another way that I see prepping leading into homesteading. And I think this is a non-traditional view. A lot of us focus, now I'm talking about pure preppers, and I consider myself far more of a prepper because I don't think I have the credentials to call myself a homesteader yet. I hope to. But anyway, preppers often think about that period of a collapse where they're eating rice and beans that they stored up and they were smarter than the rest. I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it's a thing to be proud of. But you're thinking of that, let's call it a six-month collapse period, because let's say you can store 6 months worth of supplies at your house. That's pretty generous, but let's say you can. Here's the thing, folks. Then 6 months later, you're going to need to have another plan because you cannot store enough rice and beans for the rest of your life, number one. And number two, do you really want to live the rest of your life eating rice and beans? So there's going to be another phase. After you prep and make it through the collapse, there's got to be another phase. And there's two avenues that new phase can go into. One is everything gets back together and Walmart's reopen and the trucks start running, which we know is not going to happen. So the way it is now is not going to be the part two of this story. But the part two of getting through the collapse is probably 90% probably going to be homesteading. So that's another way prepping. Just think of the chronology and the logic of it. Prepping is going to lead to homesteading or things being the way they are now, and we don't believe that to be true. So that's another reason to gain skills now and layer with the preps you have. Because, and John Jacob Schmidt talks about this, one of the reasons we prep and we don't even know it, actually Matt Shea talks about this too, is we prep to make it through the collapse to be able to restore this country or this state or this county or whatever it is that we're restoring. We have to live in order to restore it. And think of that same thing when it comes to prepping and homesteading. So you just gave me a great idea. I never realized this. This happens all the time, by the way, on this show. We'll talk to a guest and I have this idea that I never realized, I never put into words, and then they say something. I go, oh my goodness. So we have about 4 minutes left. Can you tell us, you know, how to motivate people? You said some stuff before we got on the air that I thought was fantastic. Motivate people out there, please.
Yeah, you know, for me, I'm a self-motivated individual, but I do spend a lot of time teaching people to do things. One of the common things that I see, and I know you, the excuses, I don't have enough time to prep, or I don't have enough money to prep. I'm sorry, but for 99.9% of you, that is it's an excuse, and it's a pretty lame excuse. I'm sitting with two authors that work their tails off. I know that Glenn and Shelby both have been up at the butt crack of dawn to bang out words. And with my work here, I'm commonly up at 2:30 in the morning to get things done. Does have time to get things done. It's a matter of reallocating that time to something that's more important than watching, say, Dancing with the Stars. You know, you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your family. And secondly, the second common complaint I hear is I don't have enough money to prep. Now, I know, Shelby, you had a good post about putting, I think it was $5 a week in groceries. And, you know, I've worked with employees. I've employed a lot of people over the years, people that have had financial problems. And I was like, let's sit down, bring me your budget. Let's look at what's going on. And I see the leaks in their finances. Oh, okay. Every morning you go to Starbucks and you spend $7 on a coffee and a Danish. And you go out to lunch every day, and half the time you're eating out at dinner time. Well, you know, that's a leak. You can better utilize that hard-earned resource to better prepare for what's coming. And believe me, in a few years, folks are going to be going, I wish I did more. And how are you going to look at your family and say, I'm sorry, honey, or I'm sorry, kids. I know you're hungry, but I goofed up. So, you know, the motivation, it's got to come from within. But double down on your preps, double down on what you're willing to do to get to the other side. Because, you know, my goal is to be kind of like your character in 299 days. We're going to be here to rebuild. We're patriots. We're going to rebuild this and get things back on track. I want to be there on the backside. And I hope a lot of other patriots want to be there too.
I cannot top that. That was very motivational. We only have a few more seconds, and then we're going to go into the after show. We're going to keep you, talk about some cool stuff. Thank you, Derek. This has been great. We're going to have you back on another time. Thank you so much for teaching us and motivating us and entertaining us.
Love to leave you with our awesome favorite quote that we've had for quite a while now from Ben Franklin: failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Thanks, everyone. Catch you next week.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.